96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM, Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. Your questions or comments, toll free at 855-288-4876. Now, Insight.
Back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. 50 years after the assassination of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., we're still dealing with many of the same issues regarding justice and civil rights. Yes, those issues are similar, but the faces are changing. The old guard of civil rights icons is giving way to a new group of millennial activists. Well, who are they? What are the issues they're most concerned about? And most important, what is the plan? Well, my guests are Jade Agudosi. She is president of the Howard University Student Association. Mark Carr is the founder of the Social Solution in Washington, D.C. And Jean Yannick is a manager at Fannie Mae. Lines are open if you have a question or comment for these young people as we talk about them taking the reins of social justice activism. Phone number 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Thanks for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
Let me start with Jade. When someone says social activism, what does that mean to you?
To me, social activism is using your voice, using the platform that you have to amplify whatever message. So for us in the Black community, especially here at Howard University, we've seen many of students and protests and leaders that have come through this university and that have used their voices, used their passion for whatever issues, whatever things that they feel as if though are that they're passionate about, basically to amplify their voices and really just get up and start protesting or start speaking out against some of the things that they might experience or some things that they have issues with.
Mark, what is the biggest issue for you when you look at the social justice landscape in 2018?
I definitely think our criminal justice situation is the largest issue. In my opinion, it is the premier civil rights issue of our time. And I say that, because, what being incarcerated accomplishes are some of the same things that Jim Crow accomplishes. Mm-hmm. For instance, many people that have felony records, they can't, apply for certain jobs. It renders them less employable. In many instances, they can't file for public assistance. In many instances, they can't live in public housing. And so it essentially creates this second-class citizenship. And it doesn't only impact African-Americans, but we're 13% of the population. But we're 40% of those incarcerated. In Washington, D.C., over 96% of those that are incarcerated from the district are African-American, even though the city is only 49% African-American. Mm-hmm. So I definitely think that is the issue of our time.
Jean, if someone were to ask you what is the issue that most disturbs you, that keeps you up at night, what would you say it is?
Poverty. I think poverty affects almost every single aspect of people's lives, right? So what that looks like, people who don't have health care, people who don't live in a good neighborhood, and how that affects them being able to live in a decent house, their kids being able to go to a decent school. It's very expensive to be poor, right?
Well said.
Yeah, yes. It's very expensive to be poor because you go to the hospital because, whatever happens, you don't have health care. Now you're in a hole. Now you can't work for some reason, right? And then to piggyback on what he said, if you are caught up in the criminal justice system, which we know, Blacks and other African Americans are more likely to get caught up in, then it's like a double, triple, quadruple whammy on yourself. So it's so expensive to be poor. And then you add on top of that, the history of redlining, the history of Jim Crow, the history of police brutality. You get caught up in all these different layers of oppression, and you just can't get out, right? Because you can't afford a lawyer. Now you got a record, and you can't get a job. et cetera.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about the millennial generation and social justice activism. What are they thinking about it? What is their plan as they take the reins to improve the country? 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, if you have a question or a comment. Mansa, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. Am I on?
Yes, go right ahead. Thanks for calling.
Yes, this is Mansa. And I just want to say the millennials are, they are not, it's not possible for them to take any kind of action because they are being extremely misinformed and misdirected, mostly by the Black Ku Klux Klan. These are people that
the Black Hope Mansa, I was with you until you put put that oxymoron in of Black Ku Klux Klan.
Yes,
what is the Black Ku Klux Klan?
The Black Ku Klux Klan are Black people that work in secret with white people against Black people. Most of these are secret society people, and they work in secret, and they push a lot of. So their job is to misinform, misdirect, and push a social degenerate behavior amongst Black people.
Mansa,
hold on, Mansa, because one of our panelists wants to speak, and let me, and if you don't mind, if I can add. I can't speak to the whole secret society thing, but you could very well argue that there are some Black people that are working against Black people right out in the open. Mm. And so, but I can't speak about the secret society piece.
Jesus
but
got fired from
Yeah, but go right ahead, Mark.
Well, Mansa, I also cannot speak about the Black Klan's secret society thing. I think you're probably the premier expert on that. But what I can speak to is what young people are doing to effect change in their communities. There's a woman named, I hopefully she doesn't mind me shouting her out, but her name is Yasmin Garrington, and she founded Scholar Chips. That's Scholar Chips, like C-H-I-P-S. Mm-hmm. And she founded this organization because a problem that she sought to solve were that many young people who have incarcerated parents can't afford college. So she started this scholarship fund, and she started this when she was still in high school. And now that fund has raised over hundreds of thousands of dollars and has supported many young people who have incarcerated parents and afforded them the opportunity to go to school. So I think that's just one example of some many of the great things that millennials are doing.
And I'll just jump in on this. I think that oftentimes millennials, and I guess people outside of the millennial generation, we get a bad rap from them because they always assume that we're always on our phones, that we're just tweeting, texting, talking, and we're talking about nothing, that we're misinformed, like you said. But I totally disagree. I think that using the applications that we have, like Instagram, like Twitter, social media, being able to look something up on Google on the fly, I think that we are more prone to actually getting correct information, number one, and there is fake news out there. Shout out Donald Trump. However, I think that as millennials, we're able to use platforms like Twitter, like Instagram, like Snapchat to then, you know, mobilize and vocalize our feelings.
Look at Ferguson. That's exactly what happened in Ferguson. People went out on the street. They saw Mike Brown's body in the street for hours, and they went on social media. And before you knew it, you had a movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That movement, in many ways, is still being sustained.
Yeah, I think regardless of whatever powers are working against you and against us as the group of millennials, it is still within our responsibility to work as hard as we can against those powers, right? Because we know that Malcolm was dealing with COINTELPRO, right? The rise of the Black Messiah with Hoover, right? There have always been systems and people working against us. That should not be an excuse to not do anything, right? And that doesn't mean that we can't do anything. We've proven that things can move forward regardless of whatever issues, whatever people are working against us.
Well, what kind of challenges do the new civil rights, social justice activists face that perhaps their predecessors did not have to deal with?
Information overload and the fake news. On a daily basis, we have very quick attention spans. You have a lot of different platforms that use hyperbole and lies, right, to garner your attention. And with that comes a lot of dilution and oversaturation of information. And so nobody knows what to pay attention to. They become overwhelmed and they drown out. Mm-hmm. So it's important to be politically aware as to why those news stations or whatever platform you're listening to are doing what they're doing, how they're going about it, and how you can filter through those things and be able to make a good overall analysis rather than just listening to one, you know, particular news channel. Who rhymes with Fox?
And take your pick these days.
Yeah, right. And be able to have a good analysis.
And I'll say to that same point, I think the consistency is also something that we're like a challenge that we face in this generation. Like you said, we get information quickly. We go through social movements very quickly. Yeah. Like last week is H&M, next week could be something else. And so now that we're like really shuffling through all these movements, I think that the long lasting, like the long longevity of those movements, I think, is the issue that our generation faces. So everybody can say that we're going to boycott H&M, but for how long? Right. Like a week, and then next week it's something else, and then we're still back shopping at H&M or doing whatever we want. You know, like where's that consistency?
And where's the focus?
Yeah, and I don't think that there's much. I think that the intentions are good, so we start the conversation, but I think that the conversation ends when it dies on social media when it's no longer that conversation.
Yeah, I mean, just to like piggyback off of that, I think another problem that's sort of related to that is sort of a fragmented leadership. You know, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, but in some instances, we see a lot of leaders in the movement, they're leaders on social media, or they utilize social media and other platforms to get their word out. But there isn't that infrastructure behind them that really creates effective campaigns. And like I said, I don't think the fragmented leadership, the fact that we have so many multiple leaders, is necessarily a bad thing. But sometimes what comes with that is just this lack of structure.
Can you speak a little bit more about that?
I'm originally from the St. Louis area, so I use Ferguson a lot as a case study because it's something that you know, I was really following, you know, as it unfolded. And what you found with Ferguson is that, you know, the people that came out and mobilized the people, especially at the beginning stages of their movement, weren't like the traditional leaders, like the church, you know, leaders or the business leaders. It started off at the grassroots level. It was like people just like you and I who said, okay, enough is enough. And they started mobilizing people. So they, you know, it wasn't like this top down leadership. It was a bottom up leadership. And there were multiple people that leveraged those platforms to effect change there.
Yeah, it's like the leaderless movement.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking with millennial social justice activists. Who are they? What are the issues they're most concerned about? And what is their plan as they begin to take the reins of social activism? If you have a question or a comment, again, give us a call at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Michael, calling from Virginia, quickly, what's on your mind?
Yes, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'd like to applaud those young folks for stepping up and putting themselves in the spotlight. I had a chance to hear them earlier today at First Baptist Glen Arden. Mm-hmm. I believe some of them was there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
I'm a baby boomer myself, and I want to know, and I hear all the questions being asked of them, but I want to know from a baby boomer's perspective, how can we help you get to where you're trying to go as millennials?
That is an excellent question. I'll let you start with that, Jay, but I'm going to have to take a break and we can finish on the other side. Also, Michael, I'll need you to just hang on so that you will be able to hear the answer. But your thoughts about that, Jade?
I think that the support starts, and I think we said this back in the church, with mentorship. I think that mentorship is important. I think that as millennials, as young folks, we, as much tools as we have through social media, there are things that I can't learn on Google. There are things, there's skills, there's talents, there's things that I have to learn through somebody else. So the grooming process, my parents, aunts and uncles, friends, family, all those things that were groomed in us as younger people, we use those tools when we're trying to be social activists and when we're trying to start mobilizing people and using our voices, using our manpower to fight against some of the systems that exist. So I think that mentorship is just a really important piece because that helps at least groom the next generation of leaders and prime them all. Okay, these are the issues that you're going to face. These are the obstacles that you might face when you're trying to build a coalition. These are some of the things that you know, you can't find this on Google. Google's not going to tell you that you're going to take a lot of heat when you step out and when you are a leader of these movements. But these are some of the things that I've learned through my experience, and how can I then give that to you so that you can lead on and kind of push forward in your pursuits?
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to millennial social justice activists. What is their plan as they address the issues of the modern era? We're going to continue this conversation on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next with the original Quiet Storm on 96.3 WHUR. We're going to continue the conversation, Michael. We're going to get the rest of the answer to your question in a bit. We're going to talk to Rich calling from Boston, Massachusetts, and Teresa calling from Virginia. So stay with us. This conversation continues in just a few. Back to the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking to millennials carrying on the tradition of social justice activism. My guests are Jade Agudosi. She is president of the Howard University Student Association. Mark Carr, founder of the Social Solution in Washington, D.C. And Jean Yannick. He is a manager at Fannie Mae. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, Michael asked, what can the baby boomers, those that have come before the millennial activists, do to help them? Jean, your thoughts about that?
Yeah,
question.
So, you know, I think I echoed these sentiments earlier today. I think first we have to start with an appreciation of our history and appreciation of the work that our parents, grandparents, and folks in the 60s did for us in order to be here. Because if they weren't able to put their bodies on the line, the sacrifices that they're made, we wouldn't be able to stand on their shoulders and appreciate a lot of the privileges that we have today and we take for granted. I know for a fact that in corporate America, it didn't always look like the way it did today, right? At Fannie Mae, I am extremely comfortable. I feel heard. And there are certain things that are provided to us for a lot of minorities in the company. And I know for a fact it didn't look like that 50 years ago. Why? Because there are a lot of women, particularly women, but a lot of people and a lot of black women particularly that sacrifice themselves and put their bodies on the line and their jobs on the line to say, no, I'm going to stand up for what's right. I'm going to do the right thing. So it starts with an appreciation of history and the work that came before us. But also on the other side, from our baby junior boomer generation, you also have to realize that, you know, success may not look like how you want it to look. Mm-hmm. We have our own take up on things, right? You know, we might go to a rally and play some Future. But that doesn't mean, like, you know what I mean? Like, that doesn't mean it's wrong. So, you know, she mentioned earlier the use of
social media.
Mm-hmm. Right? And so just because, you know, we're not doing things the way they used to be done, that doesn't mean it's not working. That doesn't mean it's successful. It's a new model. It's a new age. We have to do what's relevant for today. But there's work to be done on both sides.
Mark?
You know, I think in a very practical way, baby boomers have a wealth of experience and knowledge. Many of you are accountants, lawyers, communications people, et cetera, et cetera. I would say the best way to support this work is go to some of those fledgling organizations that are trying to, you know, effect change and offer your services, you know, and not in a sort of like I'm coming in to tell you what to do, but in a very, you know, sort of, you know, for lack of a better word, in sort of a servile role, like, you know, offer your service, offer your support, because I think, you know, what's happening is that the movement is happening, and there needs to be an institutionalization of it, you know, and we need resources for that. Not only money, it's also great to support with money, but technical know-how as well.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. By the way, Michael, thank you so much for your phone call. Let me go to Teresa. Teresa calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Teresa. What's on your mind?
Hi, I am calling because the way our system is structured is the power of the ballot box. So what I have noticed with millennials, at least this last election, many who are involved in the Black Lives Matter, and I commend that, is that they did not want to vote. So I would like to suggest, yes, tweet, go out there, rally, but run for office, because the only way you're going to affect change, you can rally all you want to, but at the bottom, at the end of the day, it is it is the ballot box that changes, because when you run for office and with your platform and you get your people to vote for you, that's how policies change. That's why this Donald Trump is trying to take us back to 1950. I was not born in 1950, but he's trying to take us back there. So I just want you millennials, rally, but run for office and please vote.
Teresa, let me ask you something just for clarification purposes. You said in your interaction with Black Lives Matter activists that they do not want to vote?
I mean, I am probably your age, Harold, and my niece, who is on Facebook, told me many of her friends said, we're F with Trump, we're F with Hillary. So they didn't vote. Many of them, they just didn't vote. So you know what? When you don't vote, this is what you get.
So,
because they were like, well, well, you know what? You would have a seat at the freaking table because you ain't got nothing now. This is what ticked me off about this last election.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So I think what you're speaking to is a matter of power, right? I think one of the criticisms that I share with our millennial generation is that we don't have an understanding of power. Power is organized people and organized money in order to affect change. You know, you mentioned no Trump, no Hillary. I have my feelings towards Hillary. Because we lack an understanding of power, I think that's what leads to a lot of those sentiments. And so once we have a good conversation or good understanding of power and what it takes to make actual change, that's when you'll see mass mobilization. I personally have seen the opposite in terms of engagement within in the past few years within millennials, right? People have been galvanized not only by fear, but also by the sheer violence that they've seen on TV as well.
And let me say, you know, also, Teresa, I think you make an interesting point. This kind of conversation does indeed end with the Trump and Hillary Clintons of the world, but it doesn't begin with them. It begins with state's attorneys. It begins with delegates. Indeed, I would argue that never before have we seen recently how important the vote is and the high profile look that news media has given that delegates race in Virginia. Thousands of votes came down to one vote and literally picking a name out of the hat. I would argue that, you know, not only the millennials, but the baby boomers and everybody in between who did not vote for anything has said, I see how my vote may count.
Yeah. And I'll just say to this, it might be not controversial, but I don't know if everybody else would agree, but these are just my sentiments. Even in terms of younger people, millennials not going out to vote or choosing not to vote, although I prefer to vote because I wanted to use my voting power. And this was the first time that I was able to vote in a presidential election, which was inspiring to me. However, I do understand some of their sentiments in terms of who are you voting for? So like, I think that people, a lot of the things that they're questioning, I think that they're valid points. Even me, I voted out of duty, but I didn't vote because I felt inspired by who I was electing. I wasn't inspired by Hillary. I definitely wasn't inspired by Trump. And so I think people from the older generations, they understand that it's their duty. You're going to go and vote. It's the lesser of two evils. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it for myself, my family. What's at stake? But I think for some millennials, and at least the leaders that we look towards, we're looking for people that inspire us, that give us hope, people that we believe in, people that we trust. And I don't think that a lot of millennials saw that in the candidates that were presented, which is why now I think a lot of millennials now, and I think you mentioned about younger people need to start running for office, and they are. So a lot of younger people now, even one of my good friends, like, she's thinking about running for office, running for her state office. A lot of people, they're starting now at a younger age to start thinking about, you know what? Nobody else is representing me the way that I feel I should be, represented. So I'm going to run myself. I'm going to take that step. And so I think that, like I said, I think that the presidential election, as sad as the results are, as unfortunate that people didn't vote, I do understand why some people didn't. Although I might not agree, I do understand.
Jade, I totally agree with you, and I think you're putting it very nicely. I think the lack of political will from millennials came in part from a dearth in leadership, political leadership mm-hmm. in our community. Mm-hmm. Now, I do want to shout out another guy, Bruce Franks from St. Louis, who actually was one of the leaders of the Ferguson uprisings, and now he's in the state legislature. And this is a young man. I think he's 30-something years old, tattoos on his face. You know, he, you know, from the hood, right? Hey. But, you know, yeah, but he's, you know, I think Ferguson for him was a catalyst to be more politically involved. And I think, you know, if we can foster more Bruce Franks or other young people who are willing to get out there and really put their money where their mouth is, and, you know, I think you'll see a return of the political will of millennials.
Yeah, and I'll say really quickly, I think that it also, the last election also points to accountability. And I think that what millennials do best, I think, is that we have the great talent of holding people accountable. Mm-hmm. We hold them accountable on Twitter. We hold them accountable in person. We love to hold people accountable. People call that dragging them on social media, whatever. There's different terms for it. But I think that this past election showed that millennials wanted to hold their leaders accountable. They didn't just want to elect somebody just to elect somebody. They want to elect somebody that they believe in, like I said. And the people that we believe in are people that we trust, people that we believe have our best interests at heart. And so if there are no people that are presented towards us, I think that they want that for millennials, we're not just going to go for the okey-doke. Different parties, they're not just going to count our votes. We want to make sure that they earn our votes. And I think that that's how you hold political leaders accountable to the things that they say, because they know that the votes aren't guaranteed.
Teresa, thank you so much for your phone call. Let's talk to Rich. Rich, calling from Boston, Massachusetts. Rich,
hi. Good evening. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to give you some input on a working solution.
Sure, go right ahead.
First and foremost, we all need to unite and figure out what we want in terms of melanin people as a community. We need to come together. We need to figure out what is it that we actually want.
Okay.
And once we establish what we actually want, then we need to put the proper people in position into the Electoral College so that we can get policies passed. And this is what the Southern Leadership Conference is all about with Dr. Martin Luther King. It's about policy. So I won't waste any more time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. I think he makes an interesting point. What we all want, as we know, particularly African-Americans are not monolithic in their beliefs. Mm-hmm. Even those that are in the same political party, there are various levels to the kinds of things that you want. You may be concerned about criminal justice. You may be concerned about economic issues. You may be concerned about education or women's issues, for that matter. So how do you focus the new leadership and how do you interact with the old guard, because the methods are so different?
I think it's clear. I think it's clear what we want. We want to be treated like human beings, like at the end of the day. However, the strategy to get there is what we all disagree on, mm-hmm. right? Because the only person that 100% agrees with you is the person in the mirror. And so are we willing to listen to other people? Are we willing to make compromises? Are we willing to are we willing to hear our ideas that are different from ours?
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with this, with the idea that we already know what we want. I think we want better schools in our communities. We want safe communities. We want fair employment and housing opportunities. I mean, we've said this for years in this country, that this is what we want. I think because of the history of marginalization of African-American communities, it's going to take a multifaceted approach. Entrepreneurship is something that I believe could really be helpful in reducing the wealth gap and building up our communities. But you also need you need to run for office, mm-hmm. As Teresa reminded us. You know, there's just a lot of things that need to be done across the board if we want to see these things that we want come to fruition.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Donna, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Donna. What's on your mind?
Hi, good afternoon. I mean, good evening. First of all, I'm a baby boomer, and I come from family. Gaston Neal was my uncle who taught us a lot, you know, from the home. And I think about the people, like a couple other people said, about the shoulders that they stand on. And really, I just want to say how much I want to just commend the baby boomers the millennials for standing up. I feel so proud of all of them. And I don't know if proud is the right word, but it's the feeling that I have just to know that they're doing it, and they sound good, you know, when they're talking.
And look good, too.
I spent my life as a teacher, and I can just imagine that some of my own students will be out, you know, there, or whoever will be out there, and it just makes me feel really good just to hear it. I love Yasmeen Arrington. I have an organization of my own, CEO Kids of Washington, and I had a couple of her the opportunity to go to some of her events and have one of her students in my program. And it's just lovely to hear the connections between our children as well.
Okay.
Which makes me feel just really good about everything, and that there's going to be challenges. And if you can go in it with that kind of strength and the strength of the people whose shoulders you stand on, take all the strength. That's what we have to offer you, is to keep going.
And don't forget, Donna, they will need the support of you and others like you. So thank you so much for your phone call. I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to LJ calling from D.C., also Travis on the line. Stay with us. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Jay Schutte.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion about millennial activists taking on social justice issues. Back to the phone lines. LJ calling from D.C.
Hi.
Thanks for calling. What's on
Hello.
Your mind?
Mm-hmm. Hello. I just want to say I'm enjoying this conversation. I think it's very important. You've added more to what I wanted to say, or you've discussed more, so I'm going to add to that, too. You, first of all, said something about being leaderless. You're not leaderless. You're just a new leader. Please. Put yourself in a leadership position. It's who's following you when you become the leader.
Well, just to clarify, we never said that the movement is leaderless, but there are multiple leaders. So there's no, like, central leader like Martin Luther King or Malcolm X, or, you know, which was, you know, the model before. Now there are leaders all over the place.
Yeah, so. Leaderless movement doesn't, like you said, doesn't mean that we're not leaders, but there's not one specific
person.
Right,
central.
Yeah. When there's one specific person, then the movement dies when they do.
Go ahead, LJ.
About mentors.
Mm-hmm.
You were talking about mentors. It's important as a mentee that you're specific on what you want, because there are millions of people out here with resources and can offer you something, but if we don't know what you want, we can't address it. So, like, defining the requirement. Take project management. Defining the requirement, and then it gets addressed. I think multifaceted agenda, I think you should have multifaceted, multi-level. And don't just have one agenda, because, believe it or not, we baby boomers used to be you. They just didn't call us millennials. We had the same fever and excitement about moving forward. We just had Black Power, the Black Panthers. We have all that. But what I'm trying to say is do multifaceted. Go after everything. Just don't whittle yourself down to one agenda, because there are many things that need to happen. As you've said, so I totally agree with you, there's many things that have to happen. But we are all available to help you. But me, I am a mentor. I need to know what you need. Mm-hmm. To mentor you. I'm just not going to walk in and say, I'm here to help.
Okay.
I need to know what you need so I can address it specifically and get you out, in and out, so you can get what you know and you can go. Because you all move a little bit faster than us because you've had the internet and all of this stuff.
Okay.
But we do have things to offer to you.
Well, LJ, thank you so much for sharing with us. Jean, you wanted to make a point.
Yeah, so earlier in the panel, one of the things I discussed was that we all have a God-given talent. And we should honor God by honoring our talents. And so he mentioned within the movement, it's not a one leader, one person approach. Everybody needs to pitch in and do their part, right? And so we have to each of us within ourselves first identify what our talents are, what we like doing, right? And then we have to look at how can we contribute. And you don't have to be that person in the front line, you know, holding up the protest signs. Whatever contribution looks like to you, whatever your talents look like to you, that's what you need to do. For example, in my time in school, when I was studying at the University of Maryland College Park, go Terps,
Excuse that.
We're in Biden territory. I'm sorry. I won't allow it.
This is not friendly.
I cannot allow
this is not a safe space. I don't feel safe.
H-U.
Let's start a war,
okay?
Baby.
Let me switch over real quick.
Yeah.
So when I was in school, obviously busy, you know, three jobs, right? One of the things that I knew I could do or contribute, like bare minimum, was go to local middle schools, look on high schools, and say, hey, this is my experience in college. This is how I navigated it. These are the ton of mistakes I did. Don't make these mistakes. Think about doing this, right? So, in other words, take whatever talent you have, take whatever experience you have, and whatever contribution looks like, do that, right? In whatever capacity makes the most sense for you.
Yeah. So we all have different lives. Because that's something that I'm really big on. I mean, coming to Howard freshman year, I had like, and even just growing up, everybody kind of forces upon you an idea of what a leader looks like. So a leader is supposed to be, you know, the loudest voice, the strongest person in the room, the person that kind of takes charge. The person
a man.
That, yeah, a man.
Yeah.
And those are kind of the things that we have in our mind when we think about what leadership looks like. And so I think that when we have those ideas, then we stifle the leadership within us and what we can be in our potential. So I realized pretty kind of late in my Howard experience, my style of leadership is I'm a worker bee. I like to work behind the scenes. I work better behind the scenes. I'm not really the out in the front type of person. I like to get my hands dirty. I like the details. I'm super detail oriented. Big picture, not for me. There are other leaders that are big pictures. They're the people that are the creatives. They think, they plan. We have leaders that are, you know, more low key, like myself, that are kind of on the grassroots level. They're different types of leaders. And I think that sometimes when we create different like levels of leadership and we try to place one over the other, then we then stifle how many leaders we actually can have, even within the movement.
But Jay, first of all, I need to correct you about something, because the information that I have here on my paper, it does say president of Howard University. Not worker bee, not committee chair.
Well, listen.
Well, listen,
even in my journey to becoming president of student government, it started with me being a volunteer for my friend's campaign. She ran last year. She won. I became her campaign manager. After becoming the volunteer, I just quickly moved to campaign manager because I like details. I like order, structure. Then I became her chief of staff. So I was doing chief of staff work. I loved the work that I was doing. The only reason why I'm still not chief of staff is that it wasn't guaranteed. And so I think at that point in time, I had to kind of really step out on faith, number one, but then kind of stretch myself in my understanding of how I can work as a leader. And my friend really told me, if you want to continue doing the work that you're doing, you might have to step into a different position, which will require you to be the president, the person that's in the front that people see. That doesn't mean that you can't still be doing the work that you're doing, but now it's just a different element that's now kind of thrown into the mix.
Now, real quick, because I need to get this in, and this has to do with you, and it's so important. How old are you?
I'm 21.
You're 21. So you don't have... You know, you haven't lived long enough for, you know, to see the feminist bra burning and all of the other things that women generally, as well as black women, have had to deal with, you know, as it relates to even before that, the civil rights movement. But from your perspective as a young woman, do you see your peers being receptive to leaders women leaders? Or are there still struggles, even for, you know, the 20-somethings?
Oh, no, most definitely still struggles. I mean, I'll just say this. So at Howard, we've had HUSA presidents, that's the Student Government Association. It's been 57. So there's been 57 administrations. This is the first year that back-to-back two women have served consecutively. Mm-hmm. Now, we're at a university where women outnumber men like crazy. It's like, I think 13 women to one man. Whoa. Why is it that women, and not even just as at the president role, I'm talking even within just some of the other branches of student government, women are always kind of like the secretary, the vice president, the, you know, kind of those smaller roles. And it's actually, I found, which is kind of saddening, but even on the campus where there's predominantly women, I think that there sometimes becomes struggles with women supporting other women. Mm-hmm. You saw that in this past election where even women came out and said, I don't know if I can support Hillary. I'm not sure if she's up for the task because I would just like to see a man in that role. Mm-hmm. So I think that we're still fighting. Not only are we fighting men, but we're also fighting internally with other women to let them know, like, we're competent, we're capable, we can. And so it's like really busting down doors, busting down barriers, not only within your own, like not only within the other sexes, but your own sexes as well.
I only have a few minutes left, and I need to make sure that we wrap this conversation up appropriately. And I'll start with you, Mark. How will the social justice and civil rights movements for your peers be different from those of the past, from your perspective?
Wow. Well, that's a great question. I think the difference really has to do with gatekeepers. And what I mean by that is I think in the past there was less information available. We didn't have the internet in the past. People had very limited reach to a certain extent, but now there are no real media gatekeepers. You know, the message that we have can get to audiences all over the world. And so I think that's the biggest difference. I think the internet has created that. And I think it also is the only reason why we have sort of like this leaderless, quote unquote, movement here. Mm-hmm. Because social media has afforded people the real platforms to get the word out. And I think in the past there were more gatekeepers.
Mm-hmm. Jean?
Yeah, so I think, and I was going to make the same point for the previous question. I think we still have to sort of look within ourselves and find an appreciation for the work that has been done by women, particularly Black women, to move things along, right? Because a lot of the times, the work is done by Black women, and then the face of it is a Black
Rosa
man.
Parks, y'all. Rosa
there,
Parks.
There you go, Rosa right? Parks. Rosa Parks was a long time advocate, was a long time organizer, and then when what she did happen, MLK sort of took that credit, right? And it made Rosa Parks seem sort of.
There's more to the Rosa Parks story than her sitting on the bus. And I think sometimes we minimize the experience of women in leadership, especially in these movements, to just like little moments when they're throughout the movement. They're the ones that are literally.
Yeah, I mean, the Birmingham movement would not have succeeded if it wasn't for all of the maids. Mm-hmm. The Black women mm-hmm. who are mm-hmm. walking every day.
Yeah, but the point, the real important point I want to make is that we all have to look within ourselves to figure out how we can be more open and more receptive, and also just like why is it that we have sexist tendencies, right? Why is it that we have to have that honest conversation, because it's very uncomfortable, right? I've had to look into how do I play, what role do I play in sexism, right? And trying to be conscious of that, because as men, we're sort of in a privileged position, so we don't know. So I think that's going to be one of the main differences, right? Because back then, from my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of the times, a lot of the women would come, for example, Black Panther, right? They would do a lot of the labor work, but when it came to the actual strategizing, they were just as capable, if not better. But that would not necessarily, for the most part, that would not be
because of those traditional gender roles.
Exactly. They would be left for the cooking, et cetera. Right?
And the kind of pressure that even within those movements, the greater society still put on those movements. I want to thank all of you for coming in, Jean-Yannick, Mark Carr, and Jade Agodosi. Thank you all so much. I know your
pleasure.
Parents are so proud of you.
Yeah.
Go ahead and graduate and do something good. I appreciate
it.
Hey, there you go. Thank you so much. That is The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141 for this Monday, January 15th, MLK Day. 2018. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University